TUC Radio San Francisco, Time of Useful Consciousness. Free Radio Nur Sogobi, Voices from the Nevada Test Site. In mid-May 2000, the annual peace camp was established at the gates of the Nevada Test Site, 65 miles north of Las Vegas. A micropower radio station was broadcasting for 4 days from sunrise to sundown. It was the community bulletin board connecting the campsites, gate watch, kitchen, and registration tents. Among its listeners were surprised outsiders as well. Vehicles traveling on Highway 95, the Nevada Highway Patrol, the atomic workers of Mercury City, and the Wackenhut security force that patrols the Nevada test site. The radio station was licensed not by the FCC, but by the Western Shoshone National Council. The Western Shoshone can document ownership of the area of the test site, Yucca Mountain, and most of eastern Nevada. The 1863 Treaty of Friendship of Ruby Valley that was ratified by the U.S. Congress did not relinquish sovereignty over Shoshone land. Of course, the U.S. government broke the treaty by establishing the Nevada test site and by selling, even today, large tracts of Shoshone land to gold mining corporations. The Western Shoshone come to the gates of the Nevada test site every year to call the attention of the world to their passionate opposition to the devastation and contamination of their land. They are joined by large groups of white supporters, many of them from faith-based communities. This year, most of the young folks that joined had previously protested the World Trade Organization meeting in Seattle. The radio station, Free Radio Nur Sogobi, was solar-powered. The studio was an old school bus on the slope overlooking much of the Nevada test site. It soon became a place for people just to drop in and tell their story. And it was a privilege for the three of us who ran the operation to hear what they had to say. Here are Helen Herrera, Jody Dodd, and Alex from Scotland. Dee Dominguez is the last speaker. Her tribe is facing the same corporation that the Uwa of Colombia are resisting. Occidental Petroleum is drilling for gas and oil on their ancestral land on the Elk Hills, near Bakersfield, California. Here first is Helen Herrera.
I'm Helen Herrera. I cook nationwide for groups on the front line of survival issues and toxic waste issues, land rights and sacred sites. And I've done this all my life. I'm a grandmother. But what I have to say about the test site is that I first came to cook in the test site kitchen about 93 or 94. And I remember in 93 I came and I just took notes. And I realized there'd been over 1,000 bombs detonated here. And I thought, well, if I get in that kitchen, that's the first place I'm going to see life, if there's any left here, because the food and the water's there. But I didn't see anything, not even a fly for years, nothing, absolutely nothing. Yet last year at Mother's Day, and today when I arrived, every step I took, I saw lizards, I saw butterflies, I saw birds, I saw flowers. And this is because all the hard prayers and the work of everybody, native and non-native alike, internationally and nationwide, that has come here year after year, dedicated and prayed along with the original people of the area. They have made the connection back to the land. The land has heard them, and it's returned life little at a time, but it's here now. And that's because of the strength of their prayers, allowing the local people to be the direction for them. That's the way I see it. If we could do that here, in a place where there's been over 1,000 bombs detonated, and there's just less than 2% of the original people left that still retain their language, we can do this anywhere.
Could you give us an update in your native tongue?
Well, being born and raised in Chicago, with one grandmother relocated to Fort Dodge, Iowa, who who I met in the Cabrini Green Projects as a young seven-year-old. And the other grandmother, sorry to say, the only family picture that exists of her is her dead, with my mother, 7 years old, standing next to her. It's very hard. I can sing a few bits of songs that I know we've sang that we remember, but it's ironic, wherever I stand, I believe because those things were done to our family, that now I belong to everybody. Wherever I'm standing, I have to support those people because I don't know how I'm related to them. Usually weddings and funerals, I find out the names come up and we realize we're either first cousins or I don't believe we walk on this land like strangers, that we're guided to each other because of those old family ties. And so that's why, to me, people would say, well, you don't belong anywhere now, because I've heard this from people who get many benefits from recognized tribes. You don't belong anywhere now, and nobody recognizes you. You have no federal recognition. And I say, excuse me, but I have tribal recognition. And to me, that is the best recognition I could get on this Mother Earth of mine, because I can walk into anywhere and people will recognize me, and I will be fed, I will be sheltered, and I will do my best to help that community. Because of what was done, I belong to everybody now. And it is my duty to understand what's going all over this sacred hemisphere of ours, whenever, wherever I find my feet. I do know Tongva because that community, when I arrived there, I was just a teenager with my baby in my arms and $100 in my pocket. And the first man I met there, his name was Bernardo Elvitri. And I realized this was the only man left that I'd ever heard speak his original tongue. And over the years, he's always treated us as daughters and children. And every time he spoke, the very last thing he said, he begged the people, please, learn how to love each other, learn how to live together, how to support each other. Please, that was his only request everywhere we were. And because they treated me this way and they adopted me with that love, and at their sacred emergence place, Pavungna, they sang songs for my grandchildren when they were born. And because of that love, I belong to them also. And we do share a song, the ancestor song, with any sunrise area. Because when we were fighting for Pavungna, Corbin came to visit us there. And at that time, his Bernardo Elvitri's children stood up and began to sing this song. So this song, the ancestor song, we call it a Corbin song, but it means ancestors, look in our hearts, see who we are, acknowledge us. And it speaks to all of our ancestors. So now there are many groups who do sunrise with Corbin, who have heard this song, who are learning this song, especially the native people. They're really drawn to it. Kathy Sanchez from down in the Los Alamos area last year, she asked for permission to sing it because she was part of our sunrises. And I sang it to her, and I wrote it down for her, and we sang it in her sacred circle. And I think of her now because I know that Los Alamos is burning, you know, and there's been a media blackout on the native people. And where are they, and what's happening to them? We need to know. We want to know where our relatives are and what has happened to them. Because they're not just like anybody you could shuttle off to some subdivision. They're tied much more closely than we can ever describe in this borrowed tongue to their land. Anyway, this is the ancestor song. Dai hunuka neshu neshu. Dai hunuka neshu neshu, naha kwa neshu naha kwa he, naha kwa neshu naha kwa he. Dai hunuka neshu neshu, dai hunuka neshu neshu, naha kwa neshu naha kwa he, naha kwa neshu naha kwa he. Dai hunuka neshu neshu, dai hunuka neshu neshu, naha kwa neshu naha kwa he, naha kwa neshu naha kwa he. That's for Cindy and all the beautiful children on Pimo. suffering because of all the development and the remains that are being pulled out of the earth. And they have to pass through that town every day and look at everybody's private collections of bones and everything that they've taken from them. It's got to be hard.
Helen Herrera, she works with Corbin Harney, spiritual leader of the Western Shoshone, on the restoration of healing springs in Tecopa, California. The next two speakers are white supporters, Jody Dodd and Alex from Scotland.
I work for Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and we have three campaigns, and one of them is challenging corporate power. And what we realize is that we need to link the energy that people seem to be mobilizing around in Seattle and in D.C., where there seems to be a call for global economic justice. And we have a responsibility, those of us that have been doing anti-nuclear work, to make the links with that work, showing that that this also is about money. Yeah. And it's about who's profiting from nuclear weapons development. Mm-hmm. And I just got back from the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty proceedings, okay, which are going on right now at the UN. 187 countries have signed the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. It is the most, what the word that they use is universal treaty of all the treaties that have been signed globally. Mm. Independent of the Nonproliferation Treaty, the entire Southern Hemisphere has signed treaties calling for nuclear-free zones, saying that they don't have nuclear weapons, they don't want nuclear weapons, they will not develop nuclear weapons. And several of those nations have signed treaties saying, and they will not store nuclear weapons, and nuclear weapons will not be accessible on their soils or in their boundaries. In the Africa Treaty, they said, and you cannot dump your waste from nuclear weapons development on our land either. So I think it's really important that we bring this forward, because a lot of the argument for this to continue out here, and, you know, you hear the rhetoric right now, is this around the Anti-Ballistic Missile Defense Treaty, mm-hmm, is we have to worry about rogue states. Mm-hmm. And that's a lie, because the fact of the matter is those nations have already committed to not having nuclear weapons. And in fact, one of the things I really got from the Non-Proliferation Treaty is they're trying to pull the nuclear weapon states kicking and screaming into nuclear weapons abolition. So the rest of the world is calling for nuclear weapons and nuclear disarmament. But we don't get that sense here. And the argument about North Korea, Iran, and Iraq are false arguments, because the other piece of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty is Article 4, which has, in the language of this is just amazing. It says that all nations have the inalienable right. I mean, think about the inalienable right to nuclear power. And that was the carrot for those countries to not develop nuclear weapons. So what we're saying to them is, you can't have nuclear weapons, but we'll give you the technology, we'll sell you the reactors, we'll help you develop the resources for nuclear power. What that's done is that these countries then have nuclear power breeder reactors, and we're lying by saying, oh, look, they're developing nuclear weapons, therefore we must maintain ours, when in fact these reactors are for nuclear power. We are using what we've given them, what we've said to them, we encourage you to have this, as a justification to proliferate nuclear weapons.
I just want to read you something that we declared in Scotland a couple of years ago. We resolve that Scotland shall be freed of all nuclear weapons and installations pertaining to such, and that we will not rest until our land and sea are wholly cleansed of their taint. We declare this resolution to the peoples of the world, longing and striving as we are to overcome divisions of hatred and mistrust, and to share equitably the goods and blessings of our common home, the earth. In friendship we will make a new beginning, and will leave behind the shadow and the shame of our willfully contemplated self-destruction. For ourselves and for our children, now and tomorrow, in open greeting and exhortation to all the men, women, children, and children's children of the world, we declare this. And we're saying in this as well that we're also being contaminated with nuclear weapons. I just found out that in the northwest coast of Scotland, they're thinking soon of having a sort of bombing range where they practice bombing from the sea onto islands. Northwest Coast is the most beautiful part of the world, in my opinion, and it's so rich with wildlife, and so many people and plants and animals are going to be destroyed, all in the name of military advancement. We have Faslane, which is on the west coast of Scotland, which is a beautiful loch, which is just surrounded by mountains that the government has taken over and now has nuclear submarines there in its base. And you have to go there to realize that such beauty, and it's such a deep water loch that's been just destroyed by submarines, high fences, electric fences, security dogs, guards everywhere. And it's sad to think that these things are living in our land, which is so rich. So we can completely understand what is going on out here in the test site in Nevada, because we are going through the same pain in our earth and in the other part of the world.
That was Alex from Scotland, reminding us that the British are occupying not only Northern Ireland, but Scotland as well. Scotland now has its own parliament and is on the road to self-determination. And now you will hear from Dee Dominguez, chairwoman of the Katanamuk tribe of Tejon Indians that once lived in the southern San Joaquin Valley of California up to the Grapevine Pass. She told her story on the Micropower radio station that broadcast at the Nevada test site in May 2000. And her story moved us so that we wanted to give it a larger audience today.
My name is Dee Dominguez, and I am from the Bakersfield area of the Tejon Ranch, and I am a member of the Katanamuk tribe. As descendants of the Elk Hills area that was formerly owned by Department of Energy, the property was sold to Occidental in 1998 for $3.65 billion, 46,000 acres. We became involved with DOE at that time, and unfortunately I come here and I see that name again on the nuclear test site, Department of Energy, and it's very disconcerting to me. At the time of the sale, when that sale was going on, we also came in contact with another tribe, the Uwa tribe, from the rainforests of South America, who are currently involved in a life and death struggle with Occidental. On our on the property where we were at Elk Hills, which is a part of our ancestral lands, Occidental is now the private owner. And our tribe had, at the time of the negotiations for the sale from DOE to Occidental, we tried to stop that sale by filing a suit in federal court, alongside with the Southwest Center for Biological Diversity, who sued for the care of the endangered species who were in danger of being obliterated. The federal court found that the sale would go through in spite of the fact that the required data, such as environmental impact reports, were not even completed at the time of the sale, and yet the property was allowed to transfer hands. At the time when we had sued, we had felt that by leaving the lands in the hands of the federal government, that we would have had better protection under those laws for the cultural resources. Unfortunately, later we found out that we were entirely wrong. We learned that, in fact, almost every cultural site on the property had been vandalized, and there had never been any arrests. No one had ever been brought to justice for those infractions. And now the property is under the hands of Occidental, whom we are having an extremely difficult time trying to protect those cultural sites on those properties. And their development for their exploration and dropping of wells for the oil, and now that they found that gas is going to surpass the oil revenues, they're attempting to now build gas plants.
Is there a strategy that is in place, like boycotts and those kind of techniques?
I have been working with several environmental groups, Action Resource Center in Venice, Amazon Watch in Malibu, and we have found that they do not sell to a particular gas station, any oil company, rather to various. And so it's been difficult to find a station that we could go, like, say, we could go to Shell Oil and their gas stations and boycott them. But we haven't been able to do that. So what Amazon Watch and our Action Resource Center has done is that we have now targeted Fidelity Investments, and because they are one of the major stockholders of Occidental. Also, we are in our fourth year of attending the Occidental Stockholders Meeting in Santa Monica, which is always at the last Friday of April of each year. And this year, it's been our biggest rally in protest. We had over 100 supporters outside. And inside, those of us that were able to get in, Amnesty International also spoke on behalf of the Uwa, the tribe, because, you know, of the life and death struggle that they have right now. On our part, for our tribe, Occidental is currently attempting to secure permit to build the gas plants on Elk Hills. And by a stroke of luck, there have been more lawsuits on the Elk Hills property. But other parties other than our tribe and the environmental people, several unions who actually build the plants sued Occidental, and also San Luis Obispo County, who is just adjacent over the county line. Their concerns were that we are the people who build the gas plants. However, the reports that have been brought in have not adequately addressed safety issues and emissions and problems that they're going to occur during the development of the gas plant and subsequent to that period. They said, we want to work there, but we don't want to work there to die. We live in the area. We don't want to kill our families. During their research, they ran into the information on our lawsuit. I was subsequently contacted by them, and on January 20th, I attended a hearing at the California Energy Commission's hearing room. And there I disclosed to them the information that had been provided to them by Occidental was grossly inadequate. The environmental impact reports and the cultural resources material were over 20 years old. They had a document that had my name on it. State, and it was represented by Occidental, that this was in fact an agreement by all the indigenous people. It was totally false. The actually, that list of names, which included mine, was merely a listing of people who had attended a general meeting, and all it was to hash over all of the things that had occurred the year before.
One of the things that really surprises me is that the federal government, this is government land,
yes,
and then it was transitioned over to Occidental.
To private ownership. In 1996, President Clinton signed, I can't remember if it was a declaration or what it was, but it opened the window, a two-year period, to sell that specific property. There were three items as to its disposition. One, it would remain where it was under the ownership and direction of Department of Energy. The other was to transfer it to Bureau of Land Management, and it would be under their care. And third was that they would sell it. However, in that two-year period, they had to complete all of the required documentation, including the environmental impact reports, and that was not done. It simply was not done. So when we went into federal court, that's exactly what we put on the table. This court hearing was unbelievable. I just couldn't believe that this court could have operated the way it did, but it did. The suit was against Department of Energy, but Occidental, because they had such a massive investment, $3.65 million, they also became a part of the suit. And they took a whole wall, two big tables of all of their attorneys. They dropped on the table of our attorneys, my attorneys, California Indian Legal Services, and also the environmental, the endangered species attorney, Dan Roth, a somewhat completed environmental impact report. It was not dated, it was not bound, and it was just dropped on the table. The federal judge said, you haven't really met the letter of the law. However, it will be acceptable. I'm going to accept it as you have prepared it. I just couldn't believe that. Any private citizen who would be purchasing property would never have been able to purchase property without all of the required legal requirements, like an environmental impact report. And yet these people went right in the courtroom in front of the federal judge, and he stated it was good enough.
I was surprised that the fourth alternative would have been to return the land.
Absolutely, and we also presented that option to DOE and Oxy, and that, of course, was flatly refused. What I have told DOE and Oxy is, we're not leaving. We're not going anywhere. And you're going to take all of that oil out, and you're going to leave, but we're still going to be here. So, you know, why don't you come to the table? And last April, when the OWA had been here and we had attended the stockholders meeting, we requested a permit to visit one of the sites that had been severely vandalized that summer, just a few months before that. And our permit was revoked 24 hours before we were going to go out there. And we had over 60 people in our caravan that was going to go up to the property. Nonetheless, we went up to the gate and asked if they had had a change of heart and if they would allow us on the property, and they wouldn't even let us. It was like here at the nuclear test site, there's a guard at the gate, and they turned us around. What we do is we've done in the past, because there's 24-hour security there, we go to the fence post, and we place our offerings there. We've been tying prayer flags along the barbed wires, and you know we'll continue that. We're just not leaving. We're not going away. We've always been there since the beginning of time. We may not be able to walk on top of the entire surface, but our presence is definitely there, and we will continue to do that.
That was Dee Dominguez, chairwoman of the Katanamuk tribe of Tejon Indians that once lived in the vast area of the southern San Joaquin Valley of California. She participated in the peace camp at the gates of the Nevada test site in May 2000. You can contact the Katanamuk tribe by phone at 661-637-1851, or you can write to Katanamuk Tribe of Tejon Indians, Box 10766, Bakersfield, California, 93389. I hope you will contact Dee Dominguez at 661-637-1851 or write to Katanamuk Tribe of Tejon Indians, Box 10766, Bakersfield, California, 93389. If you did not have a pen to write it down, you can get the contacts for the speakers on this program on TUC Radio's website at www.tucradio.org. That's www.tucradio.org. For a copy of today's program, call 877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. With thanks to the Shoshone National Council for allowing us to broadcast, and to Marcus and Govinda, who for 4 days kept the station open and on the air, I'm Mariah Gillardin. Thank you for listening today.